You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
PackersTalk.com.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
From deep inside Lambeau Field, here's the names you need to know in the positions that need fixing for the Packers. It's the War Room Podcast.
The Green Bay Packers select Jair Alexander.
Aaron Rodgers, quarterback, California.
The Green Bay Packers select Josh Jackson.
Randall Cobb, wide receiver, Kentucky.
With all the insight you need, it's Ross Uglum alongside Jacob Westendorf and Cody Bauer.
They need multiple guys that can play, but they need a dude, and they don't even have a dude. I mean, that I think is very obvious.
That staff are older, not innovative, and that's something the Packers look for. They're looking for a modernizing of their offense as their quarterback ages.
You take away him, you look at the safeties on this roster, and it's really a who's who of the bottom of the barrel. Those guys aren't made up to be top tier starters on a defense that's supposed to be competing for championships.
The Green Bay Packers select.
Brought to you by the Packers Talk Network and in conjunction with Cheesehead TV, it's the War Room Podcast with Cody Bauer, Jacob Westendorf, and your host, Ross Uglum.
Welcome back, everyone, to the second episode of the 2019 Packers War Room offseason podcast. With me, as always, is Jacob Westendorf. Jacob Westendorf is of the Cheesehead TV draft guide this offseason. Jake, how are we doing?
Doing okay. Survived the polar vortex and I think it was like 61 below zero at one point today, so can't complain at all.
Yeah, I actually escaped the polar vortex. That was my strategy during this little bit of ridiculous weather we're having in the upper Midwest. Cody, how are you coping with the vortex? Cody Bauer, Packers draft expert Cody Bauer, joining us as well.
I'm freezing my ass off, that's for sure. I think we got up to negative 53 this morning. Staying at home, having some snow days with the kids, so that's kind of fun. But ready to talk some quarterbacks today and some interesting Packers offseason news.
Yeah, so we'll get right into the news. We do have a fantastic interview for you guys today that I'll introduce a little bit later. But for now, we've got some legitimate coaching search stuff going on. So Green Bay has zeroed in on a wide receivers coach. There was some talk about Sean Jefferson. There was some talk about even Wes Welker, I think, came in for an interview, either for a special teams gig or for the wide receivers position. But the Packers have hired Alvis Whitted. Whitted was, I believe, a seventh-round pick, kicked around the National Football League for a number of years and didn't have a ton of receiving success, but was a good special teamer. And I think had a nine-year career in the league, and that is as impressive as anything. Not a lot of guys get to stick around that long. Alvis was the Colorado State wide receivers coach for the last 7 years. So out of the Mountain West, which is very much mid-major football, he was able to produce Rashard Higgins, who is a productive wide receiver, and my son Michael Gallup, high-round pick of the Dallas Cowboys, who has already got the looks of a legit NFL starter. from last year's draft class. They also have potentially, this one not announced, but they have potentially zeroed in on hiring Sean Menninga as the special teams coordinator. Menninga is currently the special teams coordinator at Vanderbilt, a post that he has held for a number of years. So Packers dipping into the college ranks for the latest two hirings after basically, I think, pretty much just hiring professional coaches. They did bring back Luke Getsy to coach the quarterbacks. Getsy was the offensive coordinator with Mississippi State, but Getsy had spent time with the Packers before that and was certainly qualified as an NFL coach. Some interesting quotes from Jeff Janis talking about Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers, and specifically kind of the archaic nature of McCarthy's offense on Davis Maddox's podcast, The Take Cast. And so that is a heck of a listen if you guys get a chance. It's episode 60. You can find it on a number of feeds. Check out, you know, Davis's Twitter handle. Check out, I think, Evan Silva tweeted it out. But these guys are really pimping that podcast because it got quite a bit of traction with that Packers conversation. For what it's worth, Janis thinks that LaFleur was the right hire. And finally, Rappaport with a little bit of a rap bomb there, in that the Packers are expected to pay out Jimmy Graham's 2019 roster bonus, given that he will likely have one last season with the Packers, or one more season with the Packers, depending on how things go. And yeah, we'll see, because Graham's going to be in a completely different offense this year. The stuff that LaFleur runs is completely different from what McCarthy ran. I would anticipate a lot less of Graham being asked to block in line. It was something he wasn't good at. Frankly, it was something he almost looked disinterested in. And I wouldn't imagine that would be part of the plan moving forward. Guys, anything that I just mentioned really stick out to you in a positive or negative way, Cody?
Well, I just think the Jimmy Graham news was kind of a mixed reaction. A lot of people were ready to get rid of him after this season. And, you know, he obviously didn't live up to expectations or his contract. But, you know, giving up everything that the dead money factoring in and who's still on the roster for next season, with Kendricks and Lewis both being free agents, I mean, it was like a no-brainer for me. I just found it odd that so many people are ready to dump him so quick. But I'm glad he's coming back. And worst case scenario, you kind of groom a younger guy that we could potentially be bringing in. I think they should probably look to free agency as well to get some other bodies. But yeah, I just was a little confused as to why people were shocked that they're bringing him back. But I'm excited for that.
Well, and that's kind of the thing too with Graham is it's so hard to get a young tight end to produce. Rookie tight ends almost never, you know, blow the league up. That's not really how that position works. There's so much that goes into understanding all the run game facets of playing tight end and understanding all the pass game facets of playing tight end, especially, you know, when you're in line at the Y or now they're going to flex you out. Oh, they might play a little bit of receiver. It's very difficult to take all that in, you know, in one offseason. It's very, very tough. And honestly, 55 catches, 636 yards, it's not great, but it's not, you know, an abomination. And the way that contract is structured, that third year is basically where the Packers get off completely scot-free. So I would anticipate, you know, unless something really goes well for Jimmy this last year or this second year of the contract, it will indeed be the last year of the contract. Jacob, do you have any thoughts on the major Packers news here?
Yes. I mean, as far as Graham goes, I've kind of been in the discussion of, if you want to get rid of him, that's fine. I know Andy Herman had a really good piece for Cheesehead TV as to why that was the most sensible thing to do from a financial standpoint, along with Nick Perry and some other stuff. Check that out. But the reality is, Ross, you mentioned it's hard for rookie tight ends to produce very well at a high level in the NFL. And that's regardless. The Packers could pick a tight end at 12. They could pick a tight end as late as the 12th pick of the sixth round. And either way, there's going to be a learning curve. How steep that is depends on the prospect, obviously. But then you add in the fact that the only tight end under contract for 2019 is Robert Tonyan, who I know a lot of people really love, but I'm not putting a ton of stock in an undrafted free agent who was really raw coming in. And keeping Jimmy Graham, it gives another veteran to this offense, if nothing else, gives him an opportunity to play in an offense that maybe is a little bit better. There have been some guys that have come out and said since then that the McCarthy offense isn't necessarily the greatest for tight ends. There's a lot of people stating that the LaFleur offense is very good for tight ends. So at minimum, I think you can at least see something a little more imaginative for Graham this year coming into the offense and then really mentoring a guy, whether that's Noah Fant, TJ Hockenson, Irv Smith, or somebody later in the draft like Isaac Nauta or Jake Sternberger. There's a lot of names that could surface, and we'll talk more about those when we get to the tight end episode. But I think Graham is definitely a good option, maybe not a great one, like you mentioned, Ross. His numbers weren't great, but you know, when you're making $10 million a year, that kind of makes your numbers that are not great look worse than they really are. So I don't think I was all that surprised. I think the Packers were kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place if they wanted to move on from Graham, and it's clear at this point that they don't. So what you hope next year is you get, at minimum, you get what you thought you were getting this year in terms of red zone production, the touchdown machine that everybody thought Graham was going to be, in a fantasy football savant, quite frankly. And he was none of those things. So that's unfortunate. But otherwise, I mean, the rest of the stuff, from a coaching standpoint, the special teams coach is not Ron Zook. So that's an upgrade. The Janis interview, I listened to it as well. He didn't say anything that I don't think a lot of people haven't said a ton of, whether they're former players, former coaches, or just media pundits. So I'm not overly surprised by that interview. But since it is Jeff Janis, the people's champ, you know, it's going to get a little bit more consideration in, and a little more buzz in the Packers blogosphere.
So what we'd like to kind of roll out for you guys now is what I think is the top five quarterback prospect in this draft. It seems to be a consensus top 10 QB in this draft, and that is North Dakota State's Easton Stick. I had a chance to speak to Easton at length about his time at North Dakota State, but then towards the tail end of our conversation, which is about 40 minutes long, I kind of sectioned off 10, 12 minutes to just talk about his draft, pre-draft prospects, his relationship with his new agency, you know, kind of what sort of things he's doing to get ready for the combine. And so we're going to play that interview for you guys right now. Just kind of address your next step here now, if that's all right. So who from what staff did you have a chance to work with at the Shrine Game?
I was fortunate. The way the Shrine Game develops coaching staffs is they hire two head coaches, and then those head coaches who are typically position coaches from different teams around the NFL get a chance to go out and really assemble their own staff. My head coach, Coach Zimmer, is the linebackers coach at Minnesota for the Vikings, and he had a chance to go out and hire a staff. And so offensively, Ben Steele was our offensive coordinator. He's formerly the tight ends coach for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And so running a little bit of the Buccaneers offense and using their terminology, Zach Grassi, who is formerly a quality control and assistant coach in Tampa Bay, was our quarterback coach. And so it was just really cool being around, coaches that do it at the highest level, and then guys from really across the league. You know, we coaches from Washington and different franchises around the league. So it was cool to be around different guys and learn a new offense and a different way of thinking and doing things, and really thankful for the experience.
And how did you feel like the week of practice went?
I thought it was a really good week. I had a lot of really encouraging and good meetings with a lot of teams and a lot of organizations in the league. I thought those all went really well, and it was cool to get a chance to meet some guys and for them to get to know who I am a little bit. It was fun playing with guys from around the country and, you know, playing with new guys. Obviously, you know, you're throwing to the same guys and doing the same thing for 5 years at North Dakota State. So it was cool to get out and to play with new guys and to get in the huddle and see different faces and guys that have played at really successful programs around the country and using the different terminology and things like that. So it was a good week, and it's just one step in the process. You know, there's a lot left to keep working for and working hard at. And so I felt it was a good start and excited to see where it goes.
How did you feel like the game went? You guys got another dub.
Yeah, that's obviously the most important. So it was a good feeling. going out there and ending it with the W. It's different. Obviously, there's three quarterbacks, and so you're rotating, and your opportunities are limited. But I felt when I had my opportunities, I went out there and performed and had fun playing. And at the end of the day, I learned a ton through the week, and areas that I can come back here and keep working on and continue to grow. And so it was a lot of fun, and I learned a ton.
Any receivers or backs at the game that you really enjoyed playing with, or any defensive backs there that really gave you trouble?
You know, there's a lot of really good players. We had some wideouts, guys from kind of all over the place. There's Keyshawn Johnson from Fresno State, and Tarver from Utah State were guys that, made a ton of plays. And, unfortunately, Keyshawn didn't get a chance to play in the game, but playing with those two guys, and some running backs that were really dynamic, guys that could run the ball and catch it out of the backfield, Zigbo from Nebraska and Brissett from LSU. There's really good players, and like you said, there's DBs from all over the country that were really talented, and they did a good job mixing up coverages, and with even like the limited amount of stuff you're allowed to play in an all-star game, I thought they did a really good job, and everybody worked really hard all week and competed hard, and so it was a fun week to be a part of.
Yeah, I bet Husker fans wish you and Azigbo played together in college.
he was fun to play with.
How much does North Dakota State's system give you a head start on being a professional quarterback? Because that's been discussed before. John Gruden made a huge deal out of it when he did his thing with Carson. Just how much, of what NDSU does gives you a head start, because I won't name any names, but there's guys even now at Senior Bowl practices where you see it coming out that, boy, this kid X is really struggling under center.
Yeah, and obviously I'm still going through the process, and so there's more that I'll learn as I go through it. But I just think from my experience this past week at the Senior Bowl, and then just from talking with Carson, and you said it, we took snaps under center. We were in a huddle communicating and being able to spit out a play call, some of which were pretty wordy when you go through shift trade motion, a formation, a protection potentially, and a pass concept or a run, and then, you're killing it to a different play. There's a lot that goes into being in the huddle, and I think it's a skill that takes time to understand and how you communicate. And so I think there are things that I'm really prepared to do as far as, being able to play under center and be in a huddle and take drops from under center, understanding the timing of all that. Those are things that I'm really comfortable with because I've done it so much at North Dakota State. And like the terminology at the Shrine game was different, but conceptually, man, it was all the same stuff that we're doing at North Dakota State. So I felt really good about being able to learn it quickly and go into a huddle, spit it out, and know what I was doing once I got to the line of scrimmage. And so, I feel fortunate, and I feel like the autonomy that I had at the line of scrimmage at North Dakota State and the amount we did on offense are things that are really going to help me moving forward.
Give me one of the wordier play calls and let me know what it ended up being.
I'll try to think of one that we called maybe in like the national championship game. We would have had what should I give you, Ross? We could go, let's go Roger Pro, F-Fly, 45 roll, kill, sooner, something like that, which it's not a crazy long one, but it's something that we would do. It's just like inside zone. And if you got a certain look, then we're killing it to a four vertical concept, which would, not an incredibly wordy one, but you got a pre-snap motion, a concept for running the ball, and then a potential kill to a pass.
So what specifically do you feel like you need to improve on before the combine, and then, of course, before you actually start your professional career?
I think the biggest thing that I'm working on right now is just being consistent with my mechanics and, getting to a spot where where I feel really good mechanically throwing the football, that it's coming out the same way all the time. And there's some things that I'm working on with my footwork and like the plane of my shoulders, staying on a level plane. Those are things that I'm really going to focus on hard, making sure that my feet are always balanced and my weight's really good, so that I'm able to just be really consistent in my motion. And so between my feet and keeping level shoulders, those are things that I'm really going to work hard on. And I've got a great coach in Zach Robinson out here that I'm really excited to be working with. He's been fun to work with, in the limited time that we've had. But I think we've got a lot done already, and I'm excited about working with him.
What pro teams have you had a chance to speak to?
I met with about 28 teams at the Shrine Game this past week, and like I said, those were all really good meetings. It was great to get a chance to meet people and for them to get to know me a little bit, and for me to ask questions and learn a little bit about their organizations. And so I met with a lot of teams, and excited about how that went.
It can't be all fun and games, but there has to be part of this process that is enjoyable. What are your favorite parts of the pre-draft process?
Well, I'm fortunate. I'm in Southern California, so the weather's a little bit more enjoyable than it probably is for you guys up there, Ross. So I just think it starts with that. But there's really good people out here with Rep One. I'm excited to be out here, because I think they do a good job of bringing in great guys, and it's fun working out with some of the best players around the country and guys that are going to have great futures, and just coming into the facility every day, and it's a cool environment. Obviously, it's a little bit different than past off seasons, because you're not worried about building a team. You get to really focus on yourself and areas that you individually need to improve, and so I'm excited to work with Zach and the team out here with Rep One, and develop my game and develop physically, so that when I get an opportunity, I'm able to put my best foot forward and see what happens.
Last one, I promise. What is your message to NFL teams that are considering drafting Easton Stick?
I think number one, I'm a winner. Been fortunate to be a part of a lot of winning teams and be a part of a winning program, and I think more importantly, I've learned the process of winning, and it's not just showing up on Saturday or Sunday and playing really well, and obviously that's important. You got to come out and execute on game day and play at a high level, but there's a process to getting there, and there's steps you got to take every single day, and I've learned how to prepare and kind of build a game plan and make sure that I'm prepared every single day of the week, so that when game time does come, man, I'm ready to go. And I think our track record in Fargo and as a player myself, man, speaks for itself. We won a lot of football games, and I know what that looks like on a weekly basis, and so I think that's the biggest thing the teams would be getting, and I know I can kind of take what I learned in Fargo and help hopefully bring it to a team in the NFL, and just be a really good teammate. And I know when I get an opportunity, man, I'll be ready to run with it.
All right, thanks, Easton. All right, we want to, of course, thank Rep One Sports for making Easton Stick available to us, and we want to thank Easton for his time. That was a great insight. We certainly appreciate having legit draftable prospects on this show. Brings us some credibility, and certainly I hope is a treat for you guys, the fans. So again, we want to thank Easton. Let's get to quarterbacks. That is what this show is about, is the quarterback class. So I'm gonna kick us off here. What round, if any, are you looking for a quarterback? And I'm a little biased. I mean, there's no really way around that. I'm not hiding behind it. And so I would start looking for that quarterback specifically in Stick right at that, fourth round and on type of deal. I think he is a legitimate developmental starting quarterback, a guy
like Aaron Rodgers, and I'm not comparing the two as far as talent ceiling. Just talking about somebody that you would want to sit for 1 or 2 years and get in an NFL strength and conditioning program and really learn the process before you turn it over to him. And he comes in really ready, and that's not where I'm going with this, because North Dakota State system is incredible from a verbiage standpoint. It's very, very pro style. You could see that with the way that Carson Wentz was able to succeed immediately. But Stick is not quite as big as Carson and has some other things with his game that I think, because he was dependent on so much to run at North Dakota State, that they could clean up mechanically and really make him into a professional style quarterback with the the option to burn you as a true dual threat guy. I think there's every chance that he gives Kyler Murray a run, you know, for that number one quarterback as far as 40 time at the combine. I think he's that level of athlete. My money would be on Kyler, but Easton is certainly not far behind him. And behind Easton in that later round, I don't know, you know, what Jarrett Stidham's, what his stock is starting to look like, but this entire QB crew to me is so flat. In fact, the top 8 or 9 guys, I could see you moving them up and down. Like there are people that have Drew Lock at 2. I would have Drew Lock at 8 or 9. So it just kind of depends on what you're thinking. I like Brett Rippon from Boise State as well. I'm starting to think he's not going to be available around there. But the point and what I'm really getting at here is with that 4th round pick, doesn't necessarily have to be Easton Stick, but I'm starting to really believe, you know, that it's not DeShone Kizer. And I'm not ready to draft Rodgers' replacement. In fact, if you drafted Easton Stick tomorrow, you know, his 4-year contract would be up long before you would ever expect Aaron Rodgers to retire. So you'd have to re-sign a quarterback blindly, basically, like the Patriots admitted they wouldn't be able to do with Garoppolo. So we're not looking for that. What we are looking for is if Aaron Rodgers misses 6 games with a high ankle sprain, can someone come in and not embarrass themselves? And that's really been kind of the struggle in these unfortunate seasons that Rodgers hasn't been available. Cody, what are you thinking as far as quarterbacks? What round, if any, are you looking for a QB?
I'm not worried about QB until, you know, late day 3, round 6 or 7, you know, even into undrafted free agency. And that's basically just because I'm opposite as you. I think Kizer is still has untapped potential, and I know potential is another way of saying it hasn't done anything, and potential gets coaches fired. However, you know, there's been flashes, whether it be in training camp, preseason, and his limited time in season was obviously pretty disastrous. But, you know, they traded away Demaryius Randle, and that was just obviously removing a cancer. And to get something for him, I think, was a bonus for them. But, you know, Gutekunst is supposed to have liked DeShone Kizer coming out. This will be his 3rd offense in 3 years now. So I'm just not ready to close the book on him. I'm not telling you that he's going to go out there and even win you half the games he needs to start if pushed into action, but just very few backup quarterbacks can. So unless they fall for a guy, and I have not personally fallen for any of these guys, I can't imagine that they're going to be looking for one much earlier than, you know, rounds 6 or 7.
Another guy I actually kind of like is Clayton Thorson from Northwestern. I think he had Pat Fitzgerald problems, and I think he had weapons problems as well. But that kind of lends more credence to my point of I kind of sort of can make cases for a number of these guys. You know, Will Greer, the two guys I don't like, and we'll talk about them, you know, later, but I can make cases for a bunch of guys in this class. Jacob, anywhere you're looking to maybe add a quarterback in this class?
Yeah, I think all of us kind of subscribe to the theory of the draft is 5 rounds for a Brian Gutekunst or Ted Thompson type of general manager. That's where the Packers have made a lot of hay in the 5th round. Top 5 running back Aaron Jones is a recent example of that. Anything before that, I think, has to be somebody who can contribute in 2019 or 2020 at the latest. And I think that, you know, the Packers are in a position to where, like you mentioned, they traded away somebody who could contribute this year in Demaryius Randle. How well he could have contributed, that's a debate. That's not something we really need to discuss at this point. I think it's been beaten to death. So They got Kizer out of that. Cody, you mentioned that Kizer has had some flashes. There's a throw that we mentioned pre-show to Randall Cobb in that Bears game, and that's where it makes sense, where everybody, you look at it and you're like, okay, I understand why people were in love with him. That's what plays like that are what made me call him the best quarterback in a draft class that included Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. If Old Takes Exposed existed for podcasts, I would definitely be on that. So I'll wear that one. But I say all that to say, I think that it's fair at this point to give Kizer another shot. Maybe you look in the sixth or the seventh round as a preferred undrafted free agent. You know, like you mentioned, Ross, there's a lot of guys that I think you can make cases for. Maybe a few that you can't. I'm sure you'll talk about some of the guys that you have that you don't feel like you can make those cases for. But, you know, if you get somebody in the sixth or seventh round, develop him. Maybe he's competitive with Tim Boyle in the laser show here for the preseason and training camp. And then next year, you know, like you mentioned, Kizer was a second-round pick. So next year, 2020 meaning, is his contract year. They probably don't bring him back after that. So they do need to at least start looking in that direction. But backup quarterback is just something that I don't want to spend a high amount of draft capital on, especially when, you know, you're talking, like you mentioned, if they draft, you know, Easton Stick, just to use your example, tomorrow, he signs a four-year contract and Aaron Rodgers has an extension that runs through that contract. So you don't want to look that direction. So I'm looking later in the draft, a preferred undrafted free agent or an undrafted free agent, get that fourth quarterback in the room, but I'm willing to give Kizer one more shot in Matt LaFleur's offense as well.
And I think just myself in general, I'm lower on Kizer than you guys are. I struggled with him as a prospect just because of accuracy issues at Notre Dame. Accuracy being the one trait that never seems to really correct itself at the next level. And that's what really scares me about him, you know, just kind of moving into the future. I just don't believe it with him. But, you know, be glad to be wrong. Certainly would be glad to be wrong. We kind of already covered the next point, which who the popular guys are in that round. So let's just talk about your favorite player at the position, period. I'm going to come in with just a fire take right now, and I'm going to say that it's Oklahoma quarterback Kyler Murray, because I don't believe in Dwayne Haskins as a franchise quarterback. And beyond Dwayne Haskins, you know, you are in that Will Greer, Drew Locke, Daniel Jones, Easton Stick, Gardner Minshew, you're in that glut, that who even knows what to do, Tyree Jackson. And I think Haskins is like a full tier above all the guys I just talked about. But if you got the right coach, I think you have a higher ceiling with Murray. And so I'll explain it like this. What you have, I think, with Dwayne Haskins in the best possible scenario is like a Kirk Cousins, where you have the 16th, 15th, maybe the 14th best quarterback in the league. More than often than not, it's going to be the 17th, 18th, 19th best quarterback in the league. I don't think Dwayne Haskins, when he wins a starting role, is ever going to be a bottom five guy in the league. I think he does have the upside to be an average starting NFL quarterback, which certainly has value, especially if you have like an elite defense or something. But I think with the right coach and the right scheme, you could really, really have something special with Murray. He is so athletic, and I understand that he's short, but on film, he's a really exceptional player, and his ball placement is something that I really enjoy. He's a risk taker, but man, is he fast. And I mean, he could really affect the game with his feet if given the right offense. Now, of course, guys his size, you're going to have can he see over the line questions. You're going to have injury questions. But Kyler Murray is my number one guy because I feel like there is the upside there to have a major plus at quarterback. At some point in his career, you could have the sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth best guy in the league, and surrounded with the right weapons and the right defense, maybe you can win a championship. I think so many things would have to go right for you to win a championship with Dwayne Haskins. And isn't that the point of what we're all doing here, Cody?
Yeah, basically it's just projecting as best as we can. And with quarterback position more so than any other, it's like you mentioned, it's all about fit and the right head coach. I mean, looking at Jared Goff, he had a terrible year under Jeff Fisher. in walks Sean McVay, and next thing you know, Goff is, you know, in the Super Bowl. So, you know, it's really dependent on where these guys go, but you touched on it quite a bit. There's just such mediocrity in this class. I don't see anybody in this class other than Kyler Murray or Dwayne Haskins, I think, eventually being a good to average or above average starter. And again, to copy your sentiments about Kyler Murray, I have Haskins over him right now. I'm not quite sold on either of those two, you know, cemented in one or two, but those will probably be the order at some point. Haskins one, Murray two, but you're right. Murray is such a playmaker on the field, exceptional athlete, just makes things out of nothing, can and find the right guy at the right time, seemingly consistently. So I'm a big Murray guy. However, I think Haskins' consistency, his size, his poise in the pocket, I think coaches are going to fall more in love for that kind of type of player, where he'll fit in more systems, where, you know, Murray is going to have to go into the right situation with the right coach to make him work. But those really are the only two guys that I think are worthy of first round picks. And other than that, you start going through with the Jones and Greer and Locke, and there's some guys who I think could eventually be dependable backups in the league. Your boy Easton Stick is, you know, one of those guys. I think Tyree Jackson has some untouched or untapped potential, however young. Very raw. I think kind of almost got the Paxton Lynch thing going on, where, you know, everybody sees a big, tall, white guy with a strong arm and thinks that he's moldable. But, you know, Paxton wasn't right between the ears. But Brett Rippon is also another guy I like. I think Ryan Finley, his arm isn't exactly real strong, but, you know, he's an accurate passer. And as a backup guy, you could do worse. So, you know, for me, this class is just full of a bunch of potential backups, with only really the two, I think, that could develop into anything.
Jacob, who's your favorite quarterback in this class?
You guys aren't doing a very good job of pumping up quarterbacks to get them picked before number 12 overall. So hopefully the NFL is not listening to this podcast for that specifically, because, you know, usually we want like four or five of those guys to go before 12, so there's more guys available. But that's beside the point. My guy since mid-October has been Dwayne Haskins. You know, I know you guys have mentioned some of his weaknesses. Like you guys have said, the class isn't great. Daniel Jones is somebody, I know he just won the Senior Bowl MVP. I don't really see it with him. You know, Will Grier, Drew Locke, players like that, I don't think are anything special. I do like Murray. I just wonder, you know, those questions you had about him being 5'4" or whatever it is that he measures out as. And I also do wonder with, one, Lincoln Riley's offense, obviously it didn't turn out to be a problem for Baker Mayfield, but Baker Mayfield was a different prospect. And whenever I watched Murray, it really did. There were a lot of plays where he stood in the pocket untouched for, you know, six, seven seconds and finds a receiver streaking wide open down the field. Now, that doesn't mean that Murray is a bad player. It's just a question I would have of, can he play on time where it's, you know, 3 seconds and out? I saw it today, you know, the 30th best average, or the 30th. Yeah. So one of the worst times to get the ball out of his hand was 2.9 seconds. And that's Jared Goff. And I mean, that's not a lot of time. You know, the NFL, everybody's bigger, everybody's faster. He's not going to be playing against Big 12 defenses. Haskins, to me, just as somebody, he's big. He's not a runner. He's one of your traditional pocket passers. So if somebody tries to tell you he's athletic and can move, not really. He'll be a decent short yardage quarterback sneak type player. But I do think he can make the throws. He throws the ball down the field. You know, Ohio State this year was different than they have been in the past because of Haskins' inability to move really well, like someone like JT Barrett that they've had in the past. He had to stand in the pocket and make plays down the field. He throws the corner route well. He has above average arm strength, in my opinion. If we were talking last year's class, I would have ranked him above Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. But, you know, he wouldn't have come in front of some of those other guys. So you're talking QB1 here, but in a normal class, probably in the 3-4 range. Solid starter. Kind of like you mentioned, that Kirk Cousins-esque ceiling. Now, you're asking, should that guy be picked, you know, fifth overall, or, you know, wherever the Giants or the Jaguars or some team like that that's going to be looking for a quarterback is at? Probably not. But that's the situation they're in. And as we've learned several times over the years, teams that need quarterbacks, they take them, and more often than not, they're trading up to get them.
Yeah, you would hope that maybe there's a foolish, you know, trade up that involves the Packers. You know, that happened last year. Now they've got an extra first round pick. I think a lot of fans are just going to want him to stay put and finally take like a blue chipper, but we'll see how that goes. I'm gonna kind of shake it up here with this next point, and that's because we've sort of already talked about the requested point here. Bust watch. I want to talk about my two guys. I really don't believe in Drew Lock and Daniel Jones. I think that Drew Lock is like a mortal lock, if you will, to end up in Denver. I think Elway's obsessed with him. I think his arm reminds Elway of himself. And I think we've been pretty much shown that Elway is going to make the worst possible decision in almost any case in his time as a general manager. But in general, I don't see it with Daniel Jones either. Maybe it's just me and anti-Duke bias. I don't know. But I just struggle seeing what exactly, you know, you're looking for outside of the quick game with him. Anticipation throws, I don't see it. Intermediate accuracy, deep accuracy. I think Cutcliffe is just a really, really smart coach. And I think Daniel Jones is very much the beneficiary to that coaching. Anyway, those are the guys that worry me. Does anybody worry you, Cody?
I mean, I think depending on where they get drafted, I don't believe Drew Lock or Daniel Jones are first-round guys. And, you know, there is talk that those guys go that high. So I think both those guys, for me, would be on a bust watch list, if you would. Other than that, you know, none of the guys are rated that highly to be projected as a starter. I guess some people do like Will Grier quite a bit. And I guess if he's drafted high and expected to do things early on, you know, he's certainly up there to be a bust watch kind of guy. So, you know, with the mediocrity of the class, I don't think there's too many expectations to really have anybody be a bust. But a guy who, I guess, the opposite of that, if I was targeting a guy later in the draft, I think Jared Stidham has a lot of physical tools. He's kind of bounced around some different offenses. And as far as his arm goes, I think he could give Tim Boyle a run for QB3. But ultimately, like I said, you know, waiting is not a bad option in this year for me anyway.
Jacob, anybody on bust watch for you?
No, I mean, I'm with you. You kind of took the words right out of my mouth. So it's not just anti-Duke bias. I kind of mentioned Daniel Jones earlier. That's a guy who I would be willing to bet. You know, he's listed as a 6'5 player. So he's a tall guy, and he looks the part, so to speak. So I think he'll get drafted higher than he should. And I've read the same things you have about how John Elway's in love with Drew Lock, and he was in love with Josh Allen. And anybody who listened to the show last year knew my opinion on Josh Allen. So I just don't buy into those guys either. I think that you're looking at guys that will either be really turnover prone, or in Daniel Jones's case, he'll be one of those guys who – you know, you pick him 7th overall, and he throws the ball four yards down the field at a time, and he's never going to win you a game. And when you're picking a guy 7th overall, I know quarterback wins isn't a thing, but there are games where we've seen it. You know, we're Packers fans. We've watched Aaron Rodgers just go out there and carry a team to win before. When you pick a guy that high in the draft, that's what you want. That's what you're looking for, is somebody that doesn't have to do that all the time, but is at least capable of doing those things. Ross, you know, that's kind of the discussion we had a few years ago on why you and I liked Carson Wentz over Jared Goff. I think that the same sort of principles apply here, that I don't think that, you know, like Jared Goff, I know he's playing in the Super Bowl, but I don't know what your guys' opinion are on Jared Goff specifically since he's been in the league. But I really do think, you know, some of the stuff you're talking about with Daniel Jones is a byproduct of the great offense that Sean McVay has put together. And I think that you see, I mean, McVay has done several things this year that suggest to you he doesn't trust his quarterback. And I think that's the kind of guy you're looking at with Daniel Jones. And then Lock, I mean, I think you mentioned it. You know, if John Elway likes you, that's a red flag for me already. And I wouldn't be – I hope somebody takes those guys in the top 10, because like I mentioned before, you want guys pushed down to Green Bay, and they don't need a quarterback like that. So those are those two guys. Yeah, you basically took the words right out of my mouth.
All right, last question. Jacob, what is the likelihood the Packers draft one of these – quarterbacks with one of their 6 picks in the first 4 rounds?
Boy, that's a good question. And we do this question every year, so I always really enjoy the projection part of it. But I would guess around 20%. I don't think it's impossible. Maybe that second fourth-round pick that they got in the HaHa Clinton Dix trade, or maybe if they really have fallen in love with the guy and he's there in the late third round in a move-back kind of scenario. But I don't think it's a very high possibility. 20% might even be on the high end of things. But yeah, I'll go right around 20% just because of the situation with Kaiser's contract. Maybe they want that extra year to evaluate a higher end prospect.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm right at 25 to 30%. I think that there is a chance, but not as good of a chance as 50-50. I don't think it's a coin flip. I think that we're probably 1 year away. They'll have one more year of Kaiser under contract, and then in the 2020 draft, they'll draft his replacement, is my guess. Cody, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm at 10-15%. Just you can never rule anything out, and how we took a punter and a long snapper last year, so really anything's possible. But I'll put it slimmer than you guys at, you know, say 15%.
All right, guys, thanks for helping me out with this one. As always, listeners, thank you for downloading. If you appreciate what you heard tonight, go over to Packers Talk on whatever way that you get your podcast, whether it's SoundCloud, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, doesn't matter. Give us a 5-star review. Give us a verbal review. Those kind of things move us up in the line when people search Packers, when people search NFL, and we appreciate that so, so very much. Again, thank you to Rep One Sports. Thank you to Easton Stick. And one more time, thank you all to the fans. And go Packers.